The secret side of me, I never let you see. I keep it caged. Hour number two of overtime. Jake Miller, Josh Stackhouse. One more hour right here on Fan Run Radio. John Dunn will be joining us in about 20 minutes. As for now, authorities in San Antonio, Texas, said they do not know the origins of two mystery pigs found wandering loose in the city. The city of San Antonio Animal Care Services said officials received multiple calls during the past week about two pigs wandering loose through residential areas. And an animal shelter, an animal care officer out on patrol was able to get one of the wandering animals in a neighborhood. A second pig was caught a short time later by San Antonio police. They said, quote, it's a pig deal.
Oh, my God.
Oh, you just...
Oh, wait until Charles Barkley gets a hold of that.
So... Great job.
I can't wait.
That was good.
I can't wait.
That was funny. That was actually pretty funny, you son of a gun. Are there not normally pigs in San Antonio or something? Why are they so shocked?
I don't know.
Do you think they just never have seen a pig before and they're like, pig, there's a pink thing. It's everywhere.
Well, this one had like black and white fur.
Really?
Hair, whatever you call it.
Oh, I guess there are different colored pigs. I only ever think of pink pigs.
With no hair.
I don't think of pigs having hair. I think of those as hogs.
So my tennis coach and his brother, they had a pig when they were younger. And it was like 100 degrees outside. And they were like, oh, maybe this pig wants to cool down. One of them's 11. The other one's like 9. They take a bucket of ice water and dump it on this pig. The pig has a stroke.
Oh, my gosh.
And they said the next thing you know, you hear the pig just start squealing and then it just...
dies?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So their dad came and got it, took it to the slaughterhouse really quick. Of course, they got in trouble over it.
I bet. You think that meat probably tasted a little sour, a little tense?
A little tense.
Probably stroked out and then just like made that bacon taste a little tougher than it probably should.
Crispy.
No, tough. Not crispy.
I love crispy bacon.
Yeah, but that's... it had a stroke, Jake. You couldn't get it to be crispy.
And I actually received one of these. Burger King customers received a blank receipt in their email early this morning. The fast food chain's social media accounts were flooded with inquiries after the accidental emails were sent. Thanks for ordering from Burger King.
Dude, I got one of those.
I did too.
I was so confused.
They say, thank you for reaching out. We are aware of the issue and are investigating internally, the company wrote on Twitter. People from the United States and United Kingdom received the emails, which appeared to have been sent around midnight on Monday.
Yeah, 12:04 a.m.
They were sent by Burger King's main promotional marketing email address.
I thought somebody was ordering...
And it's unclear as to whether or not they got a privacy breach. The good thing about this, for me at least, I don't have any of my card information saved on there.
Yeah, who? I don't save my card information.
No, I just do Apple Pay for everything.
Super nervous. No, I thought somebody was over there ordering Whoppers behind my back, dude.
Oh, dude, I thought I...
I just finished dinner, and I was like... Well, not really just finished dinner, you know what I mean? Like, I had already eaten dinner that night, and I was like, I did not order Burger King. When's it going to be here, though?
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think you could eat 17 ghost peppers in 1 minute?
Ghost peppers?
Yes.
No, dude.
A strong-stomach California man broke a Guinness World Record by wolfing down 17 ghost chili peppers in 1 minute. Greg Foster, who previously broke a world record by finishing 3 Carolina Reaper chilies in 8.7 seconds.
God. I'm glad I'm not that guy. I'm so glad I'm not that guy. Just imagining having to constantly prove that you can eat something hotter than somebody else just sounds like a horrible torture that I don't want to be a part of. But to these guys, it actually tastes good. So, yeah, thank God I'm not these guys. Like the TikTok guys that do it all the time that are just like putting Takis on top of just sriracha.
Are you talking about
powder.
The Australian guy?
I don't know.
A green chili and some... Mama Liz's chili oil?
Dude, it's not entertaining to me. It's just like, why would that? That doesn't even sound, that sounds like the worst bathroom time of my entire life. Like, it would just hurt for the rest of your eternity. Like, life would suck, right? Like, it would suck, dude. 17 ghost peppers. Dude, I can eat, like, I can eat peppers and, like, not be upset.
Oh,
like,
you're hating your life.
Yeah, dude, like, I can eat, I've eaten two max. That's the max I've done.
You see, like, I like, you know, banana pepper, which aren't really spicy. They're more sour than they are anything. I
love banana peppers.
Peppercinis, I love peppercinis. And I love...
Those are pretty spicy.
I love jalapenos.
And jalapenos.
I love jalapenos.
Depending on the pino, you know, like you like the pickled ones, I assume?
No.
You don't like the sliced nacho style?
Ah, those are all right.
You don't...
But I like, freshly sliced jalapenos on my pizza.
Really?
Yeah. Love it.
I don't know. I like that on, like, a burrito bowl as to I like pickled jalapenos, you know, the nacho style. You know, the one that comes in a red can from Kroger? I don't know the brand. I don't really care, but... Those are, like, some of my favorite jalapenos. Because you can just throw them in quesadillas. You can throw them on stuff, and you're like, oh, cool. Yeah, a little ting.
Well, if South Carolina keeps it up and has to keep selling tickets at Costco, they're not going to be putting jalapenos on their nachos. They're going to be putting pickles on them.
That sounds disgusting. Pickles on a nacho?
That's how bad it is at Vanderbilt. You can't even get good nachos. Cold cheese, instead of putting jalapenos on it, they're putting pickles on it.
What? Yeah. Who would be like, yeah, that's a fine substitute? It's two totally different flavor palettes.
Trying to trick people.
Who would be tricked by the difference? What? No way you ever went to Vanderbilt and got a pickle on a nacho.
I'm not saying I did.
Okay.
But I'm saying.
This just sounded like a true story.
Well, no, I'm just saying, like, Vanderbilt fans, you know, they've got more book smart than they do common sense.
Well, I think knowing the difference.
That's a fact.
I think the difference between knowing different between vegetables would be book smart, Jake. I think you're being a little bit too harsh on those little boys down there.
Considering the fact that one of them did not know the difference between a lion and a tiger, he didn't know that they were two separate animals.
They've had a lady kicker, Jake.
They thought the lion was, or the lion was the female and the tiger was the male. They didn't know that they were two separate animals.
But that's pretty sad.
That's pretty bad.
That's pretty sad, because, like, what about Bengal tigers and, like, the stripes and, like, just the fact that, like, dude, are they're not even, like, in the same area, I don't even think, of the world, really, ever. Like, are they neighbors? I don't think so.
I don't.
I'm not an animal kingdom.
I don't think they're really communal.
But I'm pretty sure that they don't hang out in the same areas. I'm pretty sure, like, tigers are, like, in Asia and India. I don't think there's Indian lions.
Oh, you got Mike the Tiger down in Baton Rouge.
Jesus. Is that's weird too, right? That there's just random tiger like places you can go in Louisiana and just go see a caged tiger. Like, oh yeah, we got tigers down here. Why?
I don't know. Ask Carol Baskin.
Why? Just, what are you doing? Leave them alone.
I don't know. Just ask Carol Baskin.
Hated that show. It was funny, but I hated it.
You know, I watched like one or two episodes of it, and I couldn't do anymore.
I had to finish the first part. I haven't seen any of the spinoffs because now it just seems all fake if they're doing spinoffs. Like, money, money, money. I don't like feeling that I'm getting taken advantage of and being lied to and then thinking I'm thinking about the truth, but it's all just a big scam. Hate that feeling.
Right. And that's what happens every time you watch a Netflix documentary.
Yeah, you just feel like, who's lying here? Like, what was the... Oh, all those shows. Yeah. Not a big fan. Because, like, is that even real? Did that guy even go to jail? Or is that just all staged? Who killed the husband? Somebody has to know. Put it on a television show and they'll figure it out. CSI, NCIS, they'll figure it out. They always solve the crime.
They always do. Westchester and TJ, y'all need to chill out.
What are they?
Blowing up my Twitter because for some reason I got tagged in both of these. And now my Twitter is blowing up. I think something's happening in the world. No, it's Westchester and TJ talking about excrement in an ocean.
Hey, that was me, and that's because they're on there trying to talk trash about our basketball team, and I'm not going to take it. Not somebody that's going down the Bahamas just to lose.
It is what it is. By the way, the Tennessee Little League World Series team is wearing basically a replica of Vanderbilt uniforms.
What, like the American flag kind of thing?
No, like... Black top, black bottoms with gold pinstripes.
Sick.
But it's Vanderbilt.
What's wrong? It's just the
colors.
And
they have a star
they just
on
like
their
the
helmet.
Colors.
They have a star on their logo.
Is it the Nashville team?
I think so.
Okay, then that makes sense. They can't help that Nashville decided to have Vanderbilt as their football team and not Belmont, okay? Or Lipscomb.
I will not say anything bad about Belmont's basketball team.
No.
Their coach is a great man.
I love Belmont's basketball team since I was a child.
Their former coach is a good man. I don't know much about the new guy.
But I don't know why you're surprised that a Nashville Little League baseball team is matching Vanderbilt's uniforms. I mean, you can't lie and say a lot of Vanderbilt uniforms aren't clean. They did a pretty good job of it. But I do think I like ours better. Those cream ones were so wet. Oh, my God. We stepped it up a notch.
What did you just say?
Them cream jerseys, dude, those were wet, dude. Those were beautiful. Oh, my gosh, dude. Ugh, are you kidding me? The black jerseys, I'd have to look at the black jerseys again.
So, speaking of baseball, Logan Steenstra is leaving the Tennessee program and is stepping away from baseball.
Who?
Logan Steenstra.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh.
He was
just done with baseball?
Just done with baseball. He was a reserve middle infielder, you know, the past 2 years.
Yeah.
And he would have probably been competing, if not getting into the starting rotation for next year.
Wow. Just stepping away, huh? Wonder if it's going just to get some just health help or whatever.
It might be. I mean,
I hope he's okay, man.
Well, I mean, Ben Joyce's brother, you know, he did that. You know, he stepped away from baseball and then came back. So if it's one of those deals like you need to get the help you need, man, go get it.
Yeah, always. Always go get help, especially if it has anything to do with mental health or anything like that where you just need to regather your love for the game or something like that, dude. Yeah. Thoughts and prayers to the man. Hope he figures it out.
Now, don't take it to the extreme like Aaron Rodgers did and go do a bunch of DMT.
I don't see no problem with that if he can do it.
Oh, Lord.
If it helps you feel better. Man, they got all sorts of psychotherapies and stuff like that. They do, like, the ketamine therapy up here in Knoxville, too. It's expensive, boy, but, yeah, you can, like, walk through and stuff like that. It's pretty interesting. I've looked into some of it just because it's so interesting because I'm pretty sure they started doing that up in Colorado for a while. And then, but I don't know. Get whatever help you need, dude. Anything that helps you feel better and makes you feel like more of yourself, then I'm all for it. I don't really care.
So, Brad Crawford from 247 Sports has projected every team's in every SEC team's record for the month of September.
Hold on. Who?
Brad Crawford from 247 Sports.
Okay, yeah, Brad. Okay.
Vanderbilt 2-3. Mississippi State 3-1. Missouri 2-2. Kentucky 3-1. Carolina 2-2. Florida 2-2. A&M 3-1. Ole Miss 4-0. Auburn 4-0. Arkansas 4-0. LSU 4-0. Georgia 4-0. Bama 4-0. Tennessee 4-0.
I like it. I'm kind of right with him. You said this is for the first four games?
This is for the month of September.
Okay, yeah.
Because Vandy, for whatever reason, is playing. Oh, they got the week
they,
zero.
Yeah, they do have the week zero game, don't they? That's right. That's why I was like, what are these overall records? Then I started hearing 3-2-2. I was like, oh, this doesn't make any sense. I 100% agree with that. So that means he's got us beating Florida. What do you have Florida at, 3-1?
He had Florida at 3-1. I guess the loss is going to be to us.
Yeah, baby. Well, yeah, of course it is. That means he has them beating Kentucky?
Mm-hmm.
No, swear. That's crazy. TJ's mad, dude. He's fuming. So, what do you mean?
So, I guess, does Vanderbilt fall under the Hawaii rule this year? Where you get an extra game?
What do you mean?
The Hawaii rule. You used to get an extra game if you went out and played Hawaii in week zero.
Like a whole, what do you mean an extra game?
Like an extra regular season game.
Oh. I just thought they just, oh. I can see how this would be needed. Or do they get another bye week? Is that?
Let me see here.
Or do they just add another game? I guess they just add another
game. I
need
you to use your fingers really quick. My brain's not working right. Tennessee.
Okay.
Florida.
Okay.
Kentucky. Okay. South Carolina.
Okay.
Missouri. Georgia.
Am I supposed to be writing these down?
Just count with your hands.
Oh, sorry. Start over.
Tennessee.
Okay.
Florida.
Okay.
Kentucky. South Carolina. Missouri. Georgia. Ole Miss. Alabama. Northern Illinois. Wake Forest. Elon. Hawaii.
12.
Okay, so they're not going to take advantage of the extra game, which they don't need to, because that would put 10 losses on the schedule instead of
nine.
The possible 9 that they're probably going to get. I got them going either 2-10 or 3-9.
Do they beat Hawaii in this situation?
No.
No? Okay. Taking that money?
No.
Really?
They'll beat Elon. They'll beat Northern Illinois. Maybe.
But they're going to be the best team in the nation. They can take down Hawaii. They're going to be the best team in the nation. Listen to that confidence, Jake.
The only reason
they can be the best program, the only reason that I am not
dragging Clark Lea through the mud like I am with Shane Beamer is because Clark Lea knows. He knows that there is absolutely no possibility. And he went up and said that.
That's not why. It's because it's Vanderbilt is why. It has nothing to do with Chloe. He said that, and you said, do you remember where you coach? just laughed, dude. The whole world laughed, dude. Not a single person, I think, took his side besides
his
players.
Well, they're not getting
probably.
Hyped up by the media. They're not getting hyped up by anybody because they're Vanderbilt.
I wouldn't eat. They never do. Who's ever hyped them up except for when James Franklin was there, and that was because he actually was recruiting kids.
Yeah.
Like, they had actual receivers that I don't think they – did they ever pan out in the NFL? What was his name? Their receiver they had that was just raw?
Who was it?
Oh, my
Jordan Matthews?
Yeah! Yeah, that's right. Yeah. He played for the Eagles and just was like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
The reason I'm so hard on South Carolina and Shane Beamer is because of all the bogus hype that they have got through the offseason.
It's so unnecessary.
They're not going to be good. I don't know why people think that they are going to be good. South Carolina fans included.
I'm really glad they're getting the hype, to be honest, because I can't
wait. Oh, it's going to be so funny to watch.
Yeah, and I'd rather them get all of it than us right now, because it's that battered ball syndrome where I just really don't want to be looked at. I'd rather us all know that we're really good.
Mm-hmm.
No one else care, and we just show up 4 weeks in bawling. And then everybody kind of starts talking, and then we've already got the monkey off the back, and we're driving. We've got the machine rolling. That's what I'm hoping.
Like a John Deere tractor.
Yeah. Big boy radio.
Or like a Toyota Tundra with 297,000 pounds of in-class towing with the capability to pull a building.
Or a Dodge Ram bucking 120 down the interstate with his high beams on, blaring radio music right in the rear view of a Honda.
Gotta get your voice a little deeper. Stay with us. Overtime continues. John Dunn coming up next right here on Fan Run Radio. Fan Run Radio, overtime continues. Pleased to be joined by John Dunn from the All Vol Collin Show. What's up, John?
How you boys doing today?
Buddy, I'm telling you what. We've got people arguing on Twitter that called into the show and are now arguing with each other over
excrement.
Yes.
No, it's not.
Good Lord, people arguing on Twitter? You're kidding me.
It's a tragedy.
I accidentally burnt the state of Kentucky down over the weekend.
Good!
I made a comment there on Twitter, and I said that if Tennessee had, and I'm talking presently and future, I want to make that abundantly clear, if Tennessee had the schedules of some of these other SEC schools, they'd win 10 games a year. I mean, it wouldn't be no question, but they consistently have one of the strongest schedules in the country, and that's not something I'm necessarily mad about. I like for us to play the best, you know, and win against the best, but I mean, that's just a logical fact. If we played Elon and, you know, the Citadel every other week like some of these other schools, we'd win 10 games a year, no problem. But for some reason, now, some crazy reason, Kentucky fans were plumb mad about that one. I wonder why that is.
I don't know. I mean, you're right. I mean, here's the thing. During the past 12 years, it just so happens that we, in our rotation, play the SEC West team that's on a hot streak. You go back even to the Dooley years. We had Arkansas when they got hot, LSU when they got hot, Ole Miss when they got hot. It seemed like it never ended. We never got a good draw.
Yeah, I mean, you look in even one season that sticks out to me for recent memory is 2016. You look at that one, Texas A&M that year.
Yeah.
The game went to, what was it, double overtime? And
yeah.
It was crazy. You know, sorry about the whistles. I'm actually coaching a football practice right now, so I hadn't actually had a chance to listen to what all y'all was talking about today, so I appreciate you filling me in. But yeah, man, I mean, what's everybody arguing about today?
So pretty much just – we're not even going to get into what they're arguing about. But we were talking earlier, the first thing we started with was the fact that JG is going to play this Friday in the preseason game for the Cardinals against the Bengals because Kyler Murray is still dealing with soreness in his right wrist, and Greg McElroy, he's not feeling well either. So it's going to be up to him and the other guy.
Well, I mean, I try not to. Now, listen, before I say anything, I just want to say Garantano's a great person. He's a great kid. He's tough as nails. Nobody, I don't think anybody could dispute that. I mean, he took lump after lump after lump. That being said, love the kid today. He's a good person, all that good stuff, smart, good kid. Just was not an SEC-caliber quarterback. And I don't think that's, you know, blasphemy to say. I mean, he just wasn't. The numbers weren't there. You know, and then he goes to Washington State, lays an egg there too. So I think that that's just kind of a the proof is in the pudding sort of thing right there.
Mm-hmm.
Not successful here, not successful there. I think the Arizona Cardinals are going to be a little disappointed. And I think that this is going to be a national stage for people to maybe kind of see and look and say, well, you know, they might have been right about him. You know, maybe they were right about Garantano.
Yeah, hopefully he does show up and he just isn't great. And people are like, man, they were struggling just because of certain situations. They're not lying as a fan base.
Absolutely, man. And, you know, people, when a lot of Tennessee folks and Tennessee fans, Tennessee media guys throw that one up and say, well, you know, the Jared Garantano years were a little bit of an outlier when you look through the history because there was some talent on those teams. I mean, wide receiver was loaded with those guys. I mean, that's the sole reason that so many games were won. You look at Marquez Callaway, Juwan Jennings, et cetera. I mean, those guys just they made all the quarterbacks look good, right? All the good receivers make quarterbacks look great.
Yep.
So, I mean, all you had to do was get the ball to one of those guys in space, Josh Palmer, Marquez Callaway, the like. They would do the rest. So, I mean, any of us could have played quarterback with those guys at wide receiver, but that being said, you got to get the ball there. And
right.
That was not the case more times than not with Garantano. I will say he didn't throw a whole lot of interceptions. That's great, but he threw a lot of balls in the dirt, a lot of them, or, you know, plumb into the air. So hopefully, you know, I mean, I wish the best for the kid. I try not to harp on him too much anymore and all that stuff, but he just was not the caliber of quarterback that it takes to win in the SEC. It's just, again, people get mad. They say that that's, you know, throwing too much shade on him, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, he took a ton of luck. Anybody can stand there and take a hit. Anybody can stand there and take a hit. The fact that he got back up, that's awesome. That's great. A lot of people would. There's a lot of tough people out there. But he still didn't – it never translated over to the field. I never understood the high school rating myself.
Well, now, that's something that we've talked about on the show multiple times, you know, judging a kid and if he has already hit his apex with his athletic ability. And it looked like he hit his apex his junior year of high school.
Yep,
and
I would
he
agree.
Never got any better.
Absolutely. And, you know, that could be said for a lot of quarterbacks that come through the college game, that they apex in high school and it just never works out.
Jonathan Crompton's another one.
Exactly. I mean, there's a whole list. But at least I can say this for Crompton. If I'm not mistaken, he was near the top, if not the top, of the SEC in passing yards for at least one season, right?
His senior year under Lane Kiffin, because he had tripled – his previous season's total. I think he had like 800 total yards in 2008, and then he had, I'm not kidding, I think it was like 2,400 yards in 2009.
Yeah. So at least there was some flash of something in there. If you look back to any of the games that Garantano kind of quote-unquote led the charge, and you can look at other positions on the field, namely wide receiver and running back, and say, well, there's where the game was won. You know, you got somebody over here with 297 yards receiving, catching 5-yard out routes every time. That's, you know, again, proof is in the pudding.
Right. And, I mean, you look back at that 2019 season with Garantano. It was almost like he was better coming off the bench than what he was when they put him in as a starter, almost like the Jordan Bowden effect in basketball. You know, once he tried to become that senior leader, they brought him off the bench, and he was more efficient that way. And, you know, you never know. We could have made the tournament that year had COVID not happened, but we'll never know.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And, you know, there was a lack in leadership that I always felt from Garantano also. I never felt like he commanded the locker room like a quarterback's supposed to. You look around there right now, you look around the football team right now, those guys hang on every word Hendon Hooker says, every single word. They are there, they're brothers, they're locked in, ready to go, all of them, all together. It's a hive mind right now.
You're the boss first, and you're the friend second.
Yep.
Exactly. I mean, and he runs it with a business-like mentality. You know, I mean, he's the CEO, and he understands that. And he sets the example, and he does a great job. I mean, he leads by example.
Yeah, there's so many more leaders, I think, on this team and this roster. I mean, and then even, I mean, including in the coaching department, too.
Oh,
I mean,
absolutely.
It's insane. Yeah. How much just the leadership's changed in just a couple years, I think, is just anyone with just a football mind can look at a practice or look at interviews and tell that that's just a huge change in this team.
And, you know, we've talked about it numerous times here on Overtime, man. You can even take it a step beyond that and say it goes all the way up into the administration. Because you look, it's a ripple effect throughout the entire athletic department right now. I mean, baseball team, nothing needs to be said about those guys. Tore it up all year. Unfortunately, not the season we wanted to have. Basketball looking good. I know a lot of people are going to throw Barnes, March record out, blah, blah, blah. I don't care. Best basketball coach Tennessee's ever had, in my opinion. I'll die on that hill. I mean, you look at football, it's trending upward right now. I mean, every aspect, track and field, soccer, you know, tennis, golf, everything is trending upward right now. And that's leadership to a T right there. And, I mean, no pun intended, but it is. But I want to talk a little bit about Brad Crawford's record for the teams in the month of September. Got Tennessee going 4-0. What do you guys think about that?
I think it's pretty accurate. I mean, you look at Pitt. I mean, obviously, yeah, we need to focus on Ball State first. But, I mean, everyone's penciling that in as a win. Obviously, Akron as a win. When you look at Pitt and you look at what they've lost and what they're replacing it with, that makes you feel a lot more confident about going into that game.
Bless you.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. Bless you also. But so last night on my show, we had one of my favorite calls I've ever had ever. So I love when people disagree with my opinion on something. And I really, really, really think this Pitt game is extremely important. And the caller, he actually listens to your all's program as well. He actually heard me for the first time on here, so I appreciate that from you guys. He called in, and we were talking. I was saying how important I thought the Pitt game was, and it's for this reason, man. I mean, it's wedged in between two cupcake wins right there. You've got Ball State and Akron. So, I mean, it's a trap game just looking at the schedule from before the season gets started. I mean, it's on the road. Yes, Pitt lost a ton of stuff. But if you go into Pitt and you lose that game, and then you – for whatever reason, lose to Florida in Neyland Stadium, you know, a couple weeks later. You've got two wins against Ball State and Akron with losses to Florida and Pittsburgh before you go into Death Valley to play an enigmatic LSU team. We don't know what those guys are going to look like this year. They could be very good or they could be mediocre. We don't know yet. And then, you know, it only gets harder from there. You got Alabama. I mean, then you get another cupcake and then Georgia. Then you get the three SEC. I don't want to say cupcakes because Kentucky's wedged in there, and I know that the entire state of Kentucky. Listen, I'm in Kentucky right now. I got to watch my words surrounding me. So
they got a fake Belk in Middlesboro.
Listen, I haven't been to the Middlesboro Mall, and I couldn't tell you how long. Good Lord, it's been so. I can't even believe you brought that up. But again, I mean that Pittsburgh game is just so important for tempo and momentum of the season. I realize it's out of conference. I realize that, you know, on paper, Tennessee is clearly the better team, although Pittsburgh is getting tons of love. I realize what they did last year, but I think a lot of these mainstream media guys and a lot of national sports pundits have really kind of overlooked what all they did lose. In Pickett, you know, they had a transfer go to USC, their best receiver, and I just don't understand it all. It's a lot like some of the love from other teams in the SEC. Do I think Kentucky belongs in the top 25? Yes, barely. I think they're the 25th best team in the country right now. Do I think Tennessee belongs above them? Absolutely. I do, 100%, because I think Tennessee's the better team. Has Kentucky won 10 games the past, what, two out of the last 4 years? Yes, they have. That's two times out of the four times they've ever done it. That's great. I realize that makes them feel like their program's on the uptick, and it is. That's awesome. But Tennessee is the better team, especially this season. They were the better team last season. It was very, very close. Tennessee was the better team last season, and it showed. 15 minutes of possession time, and you still win the game. Incredible. Testament to the defense, who I think is going to be vastly improved this year. And it's like I said last night, man, I think that I know we keep harping on the Kentucky game. I just that one just keeps coming back for some odd reason near the tail end of the schedule. But this year, I think it's going to come down to the offense. Which offense is better? I think Tennessee's defense will be tired from the tempo and speed and efficiency of the offense of Tennessee, of their own offense. And then I think that Kentucky's defense is going to be a little bit, you know, sluggish and bewildered due to Tennessee's offensive tempo and speed as well. So who's got the better offense? I'm going to go with Tennessee. You've got all kinds of weapons right now. You've got two proven SEC leaders in Hendon Hooker and Cedric Tillman. Then you've got Will Levis on the other side there at Kentucky. Yes, he's being hyped up. Yes, tons of NFL potential, absolute tons. When he gets to NFL, he could very well be developed into the greatest quarterback to ever play the game. Right now, I don't understand the hype. And that's just where I'm going to leave it on that one. I think Tennessee wins that game this year, though.
Do you think he's more egotistical than he is anything?
Will Levis.
With Will Levis, so he's kind of a strange one, man. The dude eats bananas with a peel on them. He puts mayo in his coffee. I wouldn't be surprised, man, if he sleeps in like his pad and stuff.
Unwashed,
in a coffin or something, you know, or just like sleeps with one sock on and like one shoe on the other foot without a sock, or just something weird, you know. But he does come across as a little cocky. And for what reason, I'm not entirely certain. I don't know if it's the 10 wins. I don't know if it's all the smoke being blown right now. Do I think he's a capable quarterback? Absolutely. But a lot of people forget that they lost their offensive coordinator, too, along with losing guys like Wandale Robinson. That was right. Their offense right there, yeah. Wandale Robinson.
Yeah, he was such a huge part. Him.
Absolutely. And he bailed Levis out of multiple situations, and the guy still threw 13 interceptions. I just don't see it getting any better for him. They do have two big receivers in Brown, and I think Keys is the other one. There's some big body receivers, pretty quick. They're decent. Yet to see anything yet out of them, though. Yet to see a thing, so I don't know where the hype comes from. But that being said, Levis has tons of potential, but I just don't think he will get the necessary coaching and development in college to reach that potential. Now, we're talking about guys that peak in high school and college. I think he will peak in the NFL when he gets the rightful coaching and stuff like that. He's got the body. He's got the arm. He's just got to work on his timing and not throwing so many interceptions. But I hope he throws 100 against him.
Oh, God, I'd love to see 100 interceptions, man.
Oh, that'd be phenomenal.
That'd be great. Real talk, I'd like to see him throw about two pick sixes. That'd be amazing. I'd like to see some of our defensive backs. I want to see these defensive backs get some pick sixes early in the season, get a little bit of confidence about them, and go just take care of business. I want to see that ball-hawking defense.
Yeah, have a Banks interception to the house, dude. That'd be beautiful, man.
Anybody on that entire defense, man.
But yeah, I'm with you about how big the Pitt game is. It's
huge.
Early.
I'm
trying to focus so much on these first four games and try to kind of block out some of these later games just because I think so much of our season does rest on how we start the first four.
One, you mentioned. Go ahead.
Yeah, 2-2. 2-2 with wins against FCS Cup. I don't even know if Ball State's D1. I'm not sure. Or Akron, for that matter. But
Maxson, baby.
But either way, I mean, you've got two wins against. And no offense to Akron or Ball State fans or coaches or players or anybody at all, they just don't have the talent to compete with Tennessee. They just don't have the size, the speed, stuff like that. So, you know, if your only two wins through four games are those guys, you're in for a long season because you've already lost a lot of momentum. You've lost a lot of morale, and then it only gets tougher from there. I mean, you've got nothing but SEC slate after that with the exception of Tennessee Martin. Yeah. So, I mean, and you've got the two powerhouses of Georgia and Alabama, which Tennessee and Auburn are the only two teams in the country that have the distinct honor of playing every season. So, again, it just doesn't get any easier after those first four. So you got to make the most of those first four or five games. And I don't know if y'all have heard my predictions yet. I've got Tennessee 5-0 through the first five.
I seen that. I seen your end prediction, too, of 10. Didn't even know
what
happened.
Even know. Listen, I didn't even know what happened. I was just going through my schedule predicting games and ended up with 10 wins. And I'm sitting here thinking, wow, I legitimately, logically, analytically thought this out and have Tennessee winning 10 games this season. So I didn't even know what happened. But here we are.
We have the talent to get it done. It's just if we're going to be able to get it done, you know.
Those first five, man, they're extremely, extremely crucial.
Yeah.
Well, and you mentioned going 5-0, you know, 4-0 to start the season. Another team that Brad Crawford had going 4-0 to start the season was LSU. Both these teams ranked outside of the top 25. Tennessee at 28, LSU at 30. That is going to be the primetime matchup. And if you win that game, you're 5-0 going into the third Saturday in October. I think that's your 3:30 game at CBS. How wild does Neyland Stadium get?
It's probably as wild as it has been since the late 90s, early 2000s. If Tennessee goes into Alabama game undefeated, Alabama likely to be undefeated as well. Both teams roll into that one undefeated. Those are the two, and as much as everybody hates it, those are the two Goliaths of the SEC, are Tennessee and Alabama.
Yep.
And I don't care what Georgia's done lately. I don't care what Florida has done lately. I don't care. Tennessee and Alabama are the two Goliaths of the SEC, one in the East, one in the West. So this matchup will be, it'll be like the good old days, back when Tennessee and Alabama were both, you know, in monumental stature. It'll be rocking, man. I'd say it'll register on the Richter scale, no doubt.
Well, and you mentioned, too, Tennessee and Alabama being the two Goliaths of the SEC. This isn't just going back to the 90s. This is going far beyond the 90s. This is going back to the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, all the way up till today. Tennessee is, and Alabama is, a Goliath in the SEC. And we hear it all the time. Yeah. When is Tennessee going to back? Tennessee will be back someday. Maybe someday they'll do it. Make someday today.
Yep.
Make it happen. Get Tennessee back to where it's supposed to be.
This is one of the years where that is the expectation. It's to show that, hey, we're here. We might not be all the way back, but we are damn close. And honestly, I think this is, I'm not going to say a make or break year for Heupel, but I think this is a big year for him, especially to make a splash in coaching, to be like, hey, I'm here. I'm not going nowhere. I know how to coach. Okay. Not more than just offenses. I know how to put guys in positions to be better. I know how to develop guys. It's a big year for him. And I think he's going to prove a lot of these guys wrong, man.
I agree with that 100%. He's not trying to be the bridge to the future. He's taking us all the way.
Future.
Yeah, he's going to be the interstate.
He said multiple times, everybody talking about 98 this and, you know, back in the day that. He does not want to go back to that. He wants to create something new.
I
love that. I absolutely love that because I'm so sick. I mean, listen, 98 was a great year. I was 7 years old. Woohoo. You know, like it was awesome.
But what have they done for us lately?
Exactly. You know, we've had opportunities here and there to show that Tennessee was making their way back, and we fumbled those opportunities against teams like South Carolina, Vanderbilt. I'm talking about the 2016 season. That's the one that always will come back to me until Tennessee does something again. That'll be the season. I don't want this year to end up exactly like that because this is setting up to be the exact same type of season, the exact same type.
It really is.
Tennessee pulled some upsets that year. I mean, I think Florida was picked to beat Tennessee, and I'm pretty sure Georgia was too. Beat them both, and then you club up against Vanderbilt, South Carolina. Got to do better than that, but this is exactly the same type of year.
John, one more thing, and we'll let you run. You know, you mentioned this is going to be a breakout year for Heupel, and you look at other coaches throughout college football that have succeeded in year two, and they are names that everybody knows. Luke Fickell, 4-8 his first year, 11-2 the next. Dabo, 4-3 his first year, 9-5, won his division the next. Dave Aranda at Baylor, 2-7 year one. 12-2 last year. Mel Tucker, 2-5, and then 11-2. Paul Chryst at Wisconsin, 10-3, 11-3, and then 13-1. And then Sam Pittman, of course, at Arkansas, 3-7 in year one, 9-4 last year with key wins.
This could be that type of year for Heupel. Something that's extremely important is the continuity of recruiting.
Yep.
You know, bringing guys in like Nico coming in next year. I mean, you know, Tennessee's actually predicted, I think, a couple of crystal balls this week for a pair of defensive backs, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, sir.
Four-star cornerback Jordan Matthews, I believe. And Ricky Gibson, absolutely. So, you know, the continuity of recruiting and continuing the upward tick in recruiting is pivotal to success in the future, but this is a year to show those recruits. It's like, hey, you can come here and win games. Not just win games, win meaningful games, win championships in the best conference in college football. So we'll see what they come out and do. But through those first five games, like we discussed, man, extremely important.
Absolutely. And one more thing, John, I'll let you hop off here. You know, when we start bringing in these recruits, if we have guys that are coming in for their official visit Alabama weekend, we're 5-0, and it's a close game. That's when you can look at that recruit. And you can say, listen, we are you away from making a difference. If you are on this team, this is where you make the difference, and this is where you get us over the hump. And then you're in history forever at that point. Juwan Jennings, Josh Dobbs, those guys, Josh Malone, Colton Jumper even, will always be remembered for that Florida game in 2016 because they were the ones that got us over the hump. Todd Kelly. Rashawn Galton, all those guys. They will be remembered as the team that got us over the hump and finally beat Florida after losing 11 straight.
Absolutely, man. And like I said, if you go into that Alabama game undefeated, listen, this is just complete hypothetical scenario. I don't think Tennessee wins this game. But that being said, you go into that Alabama game undefeated, Alabama's undefeated, you know, making national championship game appearances year in, year out, and you beat Alabama, you talk about an uptick in recruiting. That right there, that would send it through the roof right there. That would show all kinds of stuff. And then you got the NIL on top of it. I mean, it's a win-win. So the greatest salve for recruiting is to win games. And, you know, at Tennessee, with the tradition and pageantry that they have the opportunity to host some of these recruits and show these things off, show off the beautiful stadium, show off the facilities, show off the other programs that are being successful. You know, that's another great thing about it. On top of the NIL, it makes it a dream place to recruit. So winning, like I said, it all stems from winning.
Absolutely. John, tell us where to find your stuff and where we're going to be on Friday.
So, guys, excited to have you all on Friday. Hopefully we get Davis on, too. I'm super jealous of him right now.
Right.
I'm literally standing here in a thunderstorm right now. I kind of love it. It feels nice. It's so hot outside. I'm just kind of digging it. But yeah, so on Friday, super excited to have you guys. You guys can find all of our stuff, allvolcallinshow.com. Find us on Facebook. Just search up All Vol Call In Show. Super easy to find. You can check it out on Twitter at JXHNDUNN, all smashed together. We go live there on Twitter Spaces as well. But, guys, I appreciate y'all having me again. It's a pleasure to be on with you guys every Tuesday. And I'm super duper excited to have you guys on Friday.
Absolutely. John, we'll talk soon.
Cannot wait.
See you, brother.
John Dunn making his presence felt here on Fan Run Radio. Stay with us. Final timeout. Overtime continues. Final segment coming up right here on Fan Run Radio. Welcome back. Overtime continues. Final segment. John Dunn making his presence felt. Stack, what did you learn?
Another amazing and stellar performance by our man, John Dunn.
Ain't no fun like a John Dunn call.
I'm telling you. Not even close. I agree with most everything he says, man. Honestly, I was talking about that kind of yesterday. Him talking about the culture change.
Right.
And, you know, when I was talking about how our fear that if we beat Florida, we're going to drop a game somewhere else, or the fear
right.
that if we start hot, we're going to fade at the end of the road.
If 2016 never happened, I don't think we'd have that feeling. We'd still be riding high.
I don't know about that, because I don't know.
Because that's the first time that's happened, dude, since.
Yeah.
Man.
I guess, but I just think like the way our entire program has been, though, prior to that, too, is just compounding. It's a compounding, just constantly being beat back down to where you're just,
right.
know, you're not where you want to be, and we're not the Goliath that we are and we should be.
Right.
And I agree with him that I don't think that this is the same culture. This is not the same coaching staff. It's not the same athletic department. It's not the same kids. It's not the same. I mean, you're having a team. I think right now what we have is a true family, is a true unit of people that all are going for the
right.
same goal. They all want to be the best. They want to bring Tennessee back to that number one spot. And I don't think you're going to get the same failures as what you think you've had before.
Right.
And I believe it. I believe it a lot, man. I have a lot of faith in what he's instilling in these kids and the culture that he is bringing to the thing. And I mean, it starts at the very top, and that first change that we made at AD, and then the waterfall effect of everything else. And like John said, every program, going to tennis all the way to the track team, to football, to baseball, to basketball, to women's sports, to everything in our campus, is everything is, we want it to be a championship caliber. And he said that in that 10-point kind of document that he set out, that Danny White sent out. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. But yeah, I mean, he wants us to win.
And
everyone
it's a
here.
Culture that's built. And
yeah.
You didn't have that with Phillip and the other man. You didn't have
no.
that idea that everyone wants to win as bad as we do. The fans want it. Now everyone on this that's listening can easily say that Heupel wants this team to win as much as you do.
Right. And I mean, and here's the thing. You know, you had athletic directors like Mike Hamilton who thought they were doing the right thing, but he was so arrogant that he couldn't get out of his own way. Dave Hart tried too hard to save money. John Curry was so arrogant, he thought he was above everybody. Philip Fulmer, I think he wanted to win, but he was in over his head with the job that he had. But, man, I think everybody here, everybody listening to this, is so ready for football that they can't stand it. And this past weekend, you know, I was like, okay, I can't wait. I got to watch something. Sure enough, the CFL was on.
No way.
I wish I had never watched it.
God,
it was so bad.
It's horrible. It's horrible football.
When you can go on YouTube and you can watch highlights of stuff that you already know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And it's better than CFL football, we got a problem.
I've downloaded Audible sports books, just like like biographies and stuff like that, or autobiographies, whichever one, you know. Yeah. Downloaded like two or three. I'm just going to start just listening to books. I just need some sports, man. Because I tried to watch that Pro Bowl game, too, and that was horrible.
Yeah, Pro Bowl is not.
Not the Pro Bowl. What did I say? Pro Bowl. The preseason game.
The Hall of Fame game.
Yeah, the Hall of Fame
Pro Bowl. I mean, the preseason games don't do it for me either.
It's just, well, because it's just not, it's nobody I care about watching. I don't. I care about the position battles, but I mean, I'm not about to sit there and wait four quarters to see the last two string people get in.
Right.
I don't care. I'm not here for that. That's called like half football.
I mean, that's all it is.
It's not being played at its top level of the, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you're testing out your reserves at that point. But
what are we, 4 weeks away from Tennessee football?
Yeah, and I think that, of course, we're, I think, 2.5 weeks away from week zero. So we're going to get something. I mean, you got the Nebraska-Northwestern game in Dublin. That's going to be cool to watch.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And, of course, you got Vandy and Hawaii. Take the Hawaii money line on that one. I'm not kidding.
I know. I really want to do it. I don't know if I can. I don't know anything about Hawaii. I'll have to look at them.
Hawaii, I think they went 6-7 last year, if I'm not mistaken. And Vanderbilt being Vanderbilt, obviously. That's going to do it for us. Thank you, Stack.
You're welcome.
Thank you, imaginary chair to my left. Something else coming up next right here on WKGN. Tune in tomorrow at 7 o'clock for 3 and Out right here on Fan Run Radio.